Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org for a study guide outline of today's lesson as Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of John in chapter 18 with the denials of Peter. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. We have come to the section of John that deals with the Lord's arrest and trials leading up to his death on the cross. In this section, we consider the denials of Peter, as his bold claim that he would be willing to die rather than deny the Lord is finally proven false. So in John chapter 18 and verse 17, we get Peter's first denial. It says, "Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, 'You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?' He said, 'I am not.'" Last time we talked about that it was a girl who was the porter who kept the door to this house of the high priest, or the father-in-law of the high priest. Now, this girl clearly knew the first disciple. Remember, we saw last time that Peter was with another disciple, and I believe that disciple was John, the author of the book. And he was known to the high priest, so he was allowed in, and he got Peter in after he kind of scouted around. Well, the girl clearly knows that John is one of the Lord's disciples, because she says, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" So she knows that he's a disciple. And she's now accusing Peter of the same thing. "Oh, this disciple's letting you in? You're a disciple too, aren't you?" And notice the phrase she uses for the Lord, "this man." Well, that's a pretty disrespectful phrase, isn't it? "This man," to use for the Lord. Well, I suppose that this servant girl, like most servants, and we aren't very familiar with servants in our society since we don't generally have them, but servants generally would side with their masters. They would take their master's view of things and side with their master. After all, their master is the one who's paying their way. Their master is supporting them, so they tend to take their master's side. I suppose the same thing is true of us today. We tend to take the side of whoever is paying us money, whoever's paying our salary. We tend to take their view of things because we want our salary to keep coming in. So she is not very encouraging about the Lord or his disciples, and she calls him this man. And so what does Peter do? Does he admit it? No, he denies it. He says, "I am not." He denies his discipleship. Now that's interesting when we compare him to John, who apparently boldly walked up to the gate, said, "I'm a disciple of the Lord, and I know I'm known to the high priest. I want to get in." And they just let him right into the house where the Lord's enemies were, and he admits he's a disciple. And then here comes Peter slinking up to the door and denying that he's a disciple at all. Well, it appears that all Peter's courage fled after he pulled out his sword and tried to fight for the Lord, and the Lord told him not to. He just stood there and got arrested. So much for Peter's courage. Verse 18. "Now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coal stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. And Peter stood with them and warmed himself." So it seems that at this point, the crowd that had turned out to arrest the Lord Jesus had mostly gone home. But these servants have remained here to see it through, and perhaps they had duties with the high priest and the father-in-law of the high priest and so forth, so they had to remain. And it seems that these servants of the priest have built themselves a fire. Now it is probably early spring, and it's nighttime, and it can get rather cold in Israel at night. Now, nothing like what we would think of as early spring maybe in our part of the world. But Israel, in the dead of winter, would get down to maybe typically around 40 degrees Fahrenheit at night, which is nothing like what we would get down to. But you'd have to admit, if you were outdoors and it was 40 degrees, you'd be pretty chilly. And a good fire would feel pretty good at that temperature. Now, John apparently has moved on. Perhaps he's followed, and he has more influence and is able to maybe get in and even see the trial of the Lord, or at least get near and hear what was going on. And so Peter apparently has been left alone. And he is standing there, and he's trying maybe to hide in the shadows and hope nobody notices him because he doesn't want to get arrested too. But it's very cold. It's very chilly, and he sees the servants build this fire, and he can't help but the fire looks so good. I suppose he kind of slowly wanders or sidles over that direction, trying to act nonchalant, until he gets close enough to warm himself. But I'll tell you what, it's never a good idea to warm yourself at the enemy's fire. Verse 19, then the high priest asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Now, as we already saw last time, the Lord was actually before Annas, who was the former high priest, and now he's only the father-in-law of the high priest. Yet here he's actually called the high priest. Well, I don't think that's too unusual. And we will do this, for example, when we refer to our past presidents. I could speak of President Reagan, even though he's not president anymore. In fact, he's not even alive anymore. He's died. And yet I could still refer to him as President Reagan just because he was president at one point. So for them to refer to this former high priest as the high priest, it's not unusual at all. But this was Annas, the former high priest, now just the father-in-law of the high priest. Now he asks the Lord Jesus about his disciples. And the disciples, of course, had not been arrested along with the Lord. Now, I don't know what their plan was, if they had planned to have all the disciples arrested or not. But remember, when the arrest actually came, the Lord had forbidden his enemies to arrest any of his disciples. He said, let these go their way. And so they hadn't arrested him. And as we saw, the Lord was in charge of his own arrest. Something pretty unusual, I would say. And he hadn't allowed any of his disciples to be arrested. So whether they had planned the disciples to be there or not, they weren't there. And so they couldn't be questioned. So Annas questions him about his disciples, and then about his doctrine. And doctrine is just kind of a fancy word for teaching. He wants to know what things he had taught. And as I said before, Annas is trying to draw something out of the Lord that they can accuse him of through his questioning, because they don't have any real accusations against the Lord. They just want to make up some good excuse, a show trial, some trumped-up charges they can bring against the Lord and then condemn him. So he's trying to draw something out of him by these questions. Verse 20. Jesus answered him, I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and in the temple, where the Jews always meet. And in secret I have said nothing. So the Lord Jesus answers, and he says that he spoke openly to the world. Remember that word world in English is, sadly, a translation of several different words in the Greek, in our English Bibles. So we kind of have to go back to the Greek to see what word it was. And in this case, it's a word that's very common in the book of John, as we've seen, the word cosmos. In Greek, it's spelled K-O-S-M-O-S. We spell it with a C. But by cosmos, we mean the universe, the stars and the planets and galaxies and so forth. When they used cosmos, they meant any orderly system or arrangement. And the Lord had spoken openly to the whole system, to the whole order. He had spoken his doctrine in public. And he says that he taught in the synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet. He says, you leaders, you rich class, you powerful ruling class in Israel, these are the places where you always meet, the synagogues and the temple. And that was where I taught my doctrine. So there's no doubt about it. The Lord is making clear that his teaching was not a teaching of secret conspiracies, of cloak and dagger type things, of words whispered in the dark, and secret exchanges, and secret teaching hidden from the world. No, his teaching was all out in the open. His teaching was all public. He taught everything in public where everybody could hear it. His teaching was done in the light of day, in the sunlight, in public. So there was no reason for Annas to ask him about his teaching, since his teaching was well known. His teaching was public. All he needed to do was ask his own men, his own fellow rulers, what the Lord had taught, and they could tell him because the Lord had taught everything openly. Verse 21, why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. So he says, you could just ask my audience. Ask those who heard me. You have easy access to those who heard me. And they could easily tell you what I taught and what I said. Well, of course, Annas didn't really want the real answer. He didn't really want his real doctrine. He just wanted something to trap him with. Make up like there was some secret teaching the Lord had come up with, where even though he'd never really said anything against Rome or never really said anything that could be construed as rebellious or something a criminal would do, that somehow his secret teaching was that way, and he wanted to trap him somehow. So he didn't care about the right answer, and the Lord points that out. You could easily enough get the right answer if you wanted to. Verse 22, and when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, do you answer the high priest like that? So one of these officers of the high priest, after he says this, he acts like this is disrespectful. And he acts all insulted, and he strikes Jesus with the palm of his hand. He slaps him, as we would put it. Slaps him in the face. And he says, do you answer the high priest like that? Like, that was so disrespectful. That's not how you answer the high priest. So it's like he's schooling the Lord in proper etiquette. Well, he might have thought he was schooling the Lord, but the fact was, according to the law that God handed down, it was illegal to strike a prisoner while questioning him. In order for a prisoner to be beaten, he had to be condemned. The judge had to condemn him. And then he was to be beaten in the presence of the judge. So you couldn't judge somebody worthy of a beating back then and have him carried off somewhere where you didn't have to watch the unpleasantness and be beaten. No, the judge actually had to be there and watch the beating take place. So he better be sure he really thought this person deserved it, and he's not going to be squeamish actually seeing it. The judge himself had to witness the beating, but it could only come after he was condemned. So for this man to strike a prisoner was actually contrary to God's law. So he's acting all high and mighty and holier than thou over the Lord, and yet here he's actually breaking God's law. Well, the fact is, nothing about this trial was really proper or legal. Another thing was, it was taking place at night. And trials couldn't take place at night. They had to take place during the day. And there was nothing really legal about this trial. It was just a show trial, just trying to ram it through and trump up charges so they could condemn the Lord, what they had already decided. They had judged him before he ever stood on trial. Verse 23, Jesus answered him, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me? So the Lord answers this officer, and he says, if I have spoken evil, if I have spoken something bad, something destructive, something wrong, well, bear witness of it. Tell me what it was. Explain what I said that was wrong. He says, but if on the other hand, I've spoken well, if I've spoken the truth, why did you strike me? What excuse did you have to strike me? Now, that was a good point. But notice that the Lord here is still acting like he is in charge. He'd acted that way at his arrest, and now he's acting that way at his trial. Now, this might seem pretty foolish to us, because here's the Lord bound hand and foot and standing in the presence of the court as the prisoner, and he's acting like he's in charge. But we have to remember the truth, the bigger truth that the Lord realized, and that is, taking the long view, that these men will someday stand before this same Lord Jesus Christ, and he will be their judge. And they will answer to him for their actions here at this very trial. So the Lord knows that someday the actions and the words of these men and his own words against them will be used in the trial against them when they stand before him in judgment. Now, some have actually condemned the Lord here for answering this officer and not turning the other cheek, as he had earlier commanded. He said, turn the other cheek. If someone smites you on one cheek, turn to him the other. And they say, oh, he didn't do that here. He was a hypocrite. Well, I think these people are really grasping at straws to try to condemn the Lord any way they can. Because for one thing, that was a command for his disciples as they served him. And as I've told you before, I think if somebody struck a disciple on one cheek, he was not disposed to defend himself. And maybe if he did turn the other cheek, before the man would have a chance to strike his other cheek, the Lord would stand there, be there to say, why are you striking my disciple? But the Lord had already rescinded those orders about not defending yourself, as we saw last time when I quoted for you Luke 22, where he told them, those of you who don't have a sword, you need to sell your extra clothes and buy one, basically telling them that from now on, I'm not going to be defending you like I was before. You didn't need anything to defend yourself because I was there, but now I'm going to be gone, so you have to defend yourselves. So he had already rescinded those orders. And besides, those orders were for his disciples as they served him. And I think ultimately what they meant is, don't defend yourself. And the Lord didn't defend himself physically here. He just answered back, which he'd never said the disciples couldn't do. He didn't say you had to be silent when you turned the other cheek. So these people are just being foolish in their attempts to condemn the Lord any way they can. And we shouldn't do that. And we need to rightly divide scriptures and see what's really going on. Verse 24. Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. So his initial questioning here, as we saw, was before Annas. And he didn't find any trumped-up charges to bring against him, so he sent him to his next trial, which was before Caiaphas, the high priest that year, and the whole Sanhedrin, the ruling council of Israel. Now that trial is actually not recorded in John. But if we wanted to read about that trial, we'd have to turn to the other Gospels, and some of them tell us about that trial. And that's fine. The fact is that the same God wrote all four of the Gospels, and he wrote them in a way so that if we piece them all together, we can piece together all the events, everything that happened. But it's not necessary for him to list every event in every gospel, because he knew he was going to be writing four of them as he wrote them. And his hand was guiding the whole thing. So we can piece together the story from the different gospels, and we don't have to worry about that. Verse 25, we return to Peter's denials. It says, "Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore they said to him, 'You are not also one of his disciples, are you?' He denied it and said, 'I am not.'" So we are returned to Peter, standing warming himself at the enemy's fire. And we see that at that fire he is questioned by those who are there. Now from the other Gospels we find out that this questioning of Peter was actually led by a servant girl, although it doesn't mention that here. And in fact, if we want to see how Peter's three denials and the different Gospels piece together, I posted a bonus audio on my website, knowinggodandtheword.org, that you can download and listen to, how Peter's denials fit together. So go on there to learn more about the different denials in the different Gospels. But he's accused of being one of his disciples by those at the fire, and his brave words earlier about being willing to die for the Lord are long since forgotten now, because he thought he was going to die in a battle, fighting for the Lord to take control of Israel and become king. I talked about that last time. And he wasn't thinking of just standing there and letting himself be arrested and condemned to execution. So Peter wasn't nearly as strong when the time came as he thought he was. And he denies that he's a disciple before all these at the fire. He's probably wishing they would just ignore him and leave him alone so he could find out what was going to happen to the Lord at his trial. Verse 26. One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Now we might wonder, why does this guy act like he doesn't know Peter? Well, remember, there were 600 men there, and who knows if this guy was near the front. And also, it was nighttime, and their only lights were the torches and the lanterns they carried with them to go out and arrest the Lord. So the light wasn't very good. And now the light is cast by this fire they have going. It's also not quite the same as daylight, so he probably couldn't see Peter as well as he could in broad daylight at either place. But he thinks he recognizes Peter. This guy is actually a relative of Malchus, the guy whose ear Peter cut off. So he thinks he saw Peter in the garden. He's not sure because the light wasn't good in either place. And like I said, maybe he wasn't close in the garden. Verse 27, Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. So Peter again denies being a disciple. And as soon as he does it, just like the Lord said, a rooster crowed. So the Lord's words that Peter would deny him three times before the rooster crowed are fulfilled. And of course, the Lord's words are always fulfilled. Verse 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. So, again, the trial before Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin is skipped here in John. But after it was over, they led Jesus from Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin to the Praetorium, which was the Roman judgment hall. And it says it was early morning. Now, when we think of early morning, we think of maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. But remember that they actually started their days at sunset. And then they counted 12 hours of night and then 12 hours of day. So for them, early was more like 8, 9, 10, 11. That was what they would call early. We would call that late. They would call that early. So at this point, remember the Lord and his disciples, they had sacrificed the Passover, eaten the Passover meal, and the Lord had taught them some things there at the Passover meal. Then they traveled to the Garden of Gethsemane, the Lord teaching them along the way. He'd been arrested at the garden. They'd carried him off to a quick trial before Annas, and then another show trial before the Sanhedrin. Now they're leading him away to Pilate, all this under cover of night, when his disciples, his followers, his supporters are all in bed and have no idea what's going on, because he had much support among the people, and they didn't want the people to know until it was too late, until it was all over. So this is probably early. It's probably not what we would think of as early, but it's probably around 11 p.m., between maybe 11 and midnight. We would call that late. They would call that early, since their days started at sunset. So things have been moving fast. Now, the Jews who were condemning him didn't want to go into the Praetorium, because that was a Gentile building, and according to their traditions, to go into the home of a Gentile or the place of a Gentile would be to cause yourself defilement. And they wanted to eat the Passover. Now, people have argued about this and said, well, the Lord and his disciples had already eaten the Passover. So how could it be that these were still anticipating eating the Passover? And some have suggested that the Lord and his disciples actually kept the Passover a day before everybody else in Israel did. Now, there are reasons for that. Sometimes they say, well, maybe the calendar had creeped and the Lord knew what the calendar was really supposed to be and it was a day off. And others will point out that today, the Jews who actually celebrate the Passover, they actually celebrated a day late. They celebrated on the 15th of their month, Nisan, rather than on the 14th. And they say, well, they were still doing it all the way back here. Well, that seems very doubtful to me. Because the fact is, the reason they can celebrate it late now is because they don't really celebrate the Passover. And if you know any really Orthodox Jews, they won't even call it the Passover. It's called the Seder Feast. And really what it is a commemoration of the old Passover. And they've added a lot of things to it, like the matzo balls and all kinds of different traditions that had nothing to do with the Passover God originally gave. But the Passover God gave had to be celebrated in Jerusalem. It couldn't be celebrated anywhere else at all. And so that should be enough to show us that what the Jews celebrate today isn't the real Passover. So they can celebrate it a day late. But the fact was, in Israel, where they could celebrate it correctly, it was very important they celebrated on the right day, because the day after Passover started unleavened bread, and the first day of unleavened bread had to be a Sabbath, and there were sacrifices that had to be done on Passover day, and sacrifices had to be done on the first day of unleavened bread. And for them to celebrate it on the wrong day would mess everything up. So I don't think there's any way they could have messed everything up. But I think the reason they still wanted to eat the Passover here is that if we would look at the law of the Passover, they had to eat the Passover between sunset and sunrise. And it was a whole lamb. And while they could eat the Passover as supper, if they would get up in the early in the morning before sunrise, they could actually make a second meal out of it before the sun rose. Once the sun rose, they couldn't eat any more of it. So I think these men probably had some of their Passover left, were planning to eat another meal of it, but if they defiled themselves in between the first and the second meal, they couldn't have finished their lambs, and they would have had to burn it and waste it. So I think that's why they didn't want to defile themselves, and not because they weren't going to eat the Passover till the next day. Because remember, defilement only lasted till evening anyway. Then all you had to do was wash yourself and you'd be clean. So if it was the next day they were going to eat the Passover, they shouldn't have cared about getting defiled. So I think that shows for sure that this really was Passover day. So we see that when Peter claimed he was ready to die rather than abandon the Lord, he meant what he said, but he never imagined what took place. And when the time actually came, he wasn't willing to do that. And in fact, he denied the Lord 3 times, just as the Lord predicted he would before the rooster crowed. Let us be careful that we do not rely on our own strength and devotion to follow the Lord, but remember that he is the one who maintains us by his power. We need his strength and endurance in order to follow him and believe.
Music. May we never have our devotion to the Lord be hindered because we rely on our own strength. The power and strength of God will flow to us when we are devoted to the continual study of His Word. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the book of John. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series in the book of John with Not of This World. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you learn more of God's Word, you know God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. If you wish to be placed on our mailing list for Nathan's weekly newsletter, please provide us with your email address through the website or directly at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org. Or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are greatly appreciated, you will never be solicited for funds and your email will never be shared. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say goodbye for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.